Relatively Geeky presents Comic Book Road Trip 2017, The London Nerd Crawl, or Why We Couldn't Make It to Heroes Con and Hang Out with All the Cool Kids. This episode will be part travelogue, part comic book review, and then more travelogue. A few years back, we penciled in late May 2017 for a trip to Germany. For details of that trip, listen to episode 12 of Dorkiness to Light on its own separate podcast feed. And then late last year, when we started making specific plans and reservations for this trip, one of us came up with the idea of spending a number of days in London at the start of the trip. And of course, we have a number of terrific listeners and podcast buddies from the UK, so I tapped them as my UK hive mind. These lovely folks were Mark Adams, Sir Martin of Grey, Stephen Lacey, Andy Leyland, and David Walker. I relied on these folks for general advice and encouragement, and then Stephen floated the idea of hanging out with me and Em and the missus on the Saturday of that stay. He said we could walk to comic book shops, take terrible selfies, and enjoy some fine pub food. And spoilers, that's pretty much what we did. And then, surprise of surprises, Dave Walker, from all the way in Ireland, decided to cash in some of his unused vacation time to spend his own holiday in London. And it all worked out when on Saturday, May 27th, the five of us, me and Em and Mrs. Quarterbin and Stephen and Dave, met up for a visit and a walking tour of London's top comic book shops. And to add another nice spin, we met at a place recommended by Sir Martin of Grey. So what I'm going to do with this episode is talk about the hangout, talk about the three stores we went to, and then give brief reviews of what I bought at each store, because, shockingly enough, I bought something at each store. And Em bought a few things here and there, and, not a shock, my wife spent the most money of all of us. So first, the meetup itself. Knowing our interests in coffee, in tourism, and religious history, Martin recommended a place in London called the Café in the Crypt, which, as the name implies, is a modern coffee shop housed in the catacombs crypt area of St. Martin of the Fields Church. We threw this idea at Steve, and it worked out really well as he knew that general area. If I remember, this is in the general Trafalgar Square, Charing Cross part of London, a place that Steve knew real well and was within walking distance of those comic stores. So we got there. And even though David Walker has not updated his Facebook profile pic since growing a full beard and some really crazy hair, we did find him. I mean, he's a geek, so we pretty much figured who he was. And since he was there before Steve, he got his first choice of presents that I bought, actual comic books with actual 25-cent stickers. Poor Steven got the leftover book. And, of course, when Stephen arrived, we all greeted him with a hearty welcome, Andy! Which everyone but Steve thought was hilarious. But he's a good sport, and despite being insulted and bummed that he got the leftover comic, he nonetheless took us on our nerd crawl. And I need to mention Dave Walker's gift to us. Honest to gosh, Northern Irish Tato brand onion and cheese flavored crisps. Anyway, we walked across Trafalgar Square, took a few turns down various Diagon alleys, and ended up at a place called Gosh. Gosh was a good-sized store on a corner, which meant lots of windows, which meant lots of natural light in the store. The main floor had a full display area of books by Alan Moore, Grant Morrison, and Neil Gaiman, as well as a bunch of other trades and some toys on that level. The floppies, if you will, were in the basement, and despite being underground, that area was also pretty well lit. I really liked the way that the back issues were organized. Their version of discount books were £1, and they were separated, but also integrated into the main area. So what I mean is, say, in the I section, they had a header for Iron Man, and then a separate divider for Iron Man £1. So I've never seen that before, and I really like the concept. So the cheap books were not off in their own section in another part of the store. They were in the main body of the inventory, though within that they were separated out. So you could find for each title or each letter or each categorical breakdown, you could find the regular priced books and the cheap books pretty easily. So I wasn't looking for anything in particular, but I flipped through Spider-Man £1 and Captain America £1, but didn't really find anything. But in the Avengers and related £1 area, I found a one-shot from 2006, Young Avengers Special number 1. And let me tell you just a little bit about it. This is Iron Lad, Patriot, Wiccan, Hulkling, Stature, and Kate Bishop. Patriot, who's Eli Bradley, the grandson of the fabled Black Captain America, has recently quit because he revealed he has no powers and has been using a steroid, human growth hormone, instead. Along with calls from Cap and Iron Man for the team to disband, the team faces an uncertain future. The specific setup of this issue is Jessica Jones searching out the Young Avengers in an attempt to get them to give an exclusive interview to Kat Farrell. Along the way, we get a glimpse into their pasts, their parents, their origins. Why did Eli turn to drugs? What exactly got Stature, Cassie Lang, so angry? What happened when Billy Kaplan met his favorite Avenger, who, by the way, is also my favorite favorite Avenger? What terrible secret turned Kate Bishop into such a hard-boiled chick? Marvel of the mid-2000s is pretty much a blank slate for me. So a lot of the specific details of this went right over my head. But I did like the overall story, and the framing sequence of the search for interviews made sense. That was a reasonable way to do exposition. So overall, pretty good one-shot. £1 well spent. And then we headed off, more walking down strangely angled streets. And after 2 or 3 minutes or so, Steve turned around and said that he wasn't going to tell us where we were going next, but that we should recognize it shortly. Turn here, turn there, and then there it was. The UK's number one nerd destination. Forbidden Planet. A couple days after we got back from this trip, I was in the grocery store, and I happened to see one of my buddies, Terry Colucci, who has appeared on Quarterbin 100. And when I reminded him that our trip included London, not just Germany, his first question was, "Did you get to Forbidden Planet?" And thanks to Steve, I could say that yes. Yes, we had. Now, this was a huge, busy store. Again, well-lit and welcoming. We were there on a Saturday, so they had two separate signings going on of folks related in one way or another to 2000 AD. Stephen explained that the upper level was everything non-paper, and the lower level was all the paper. So, of course, my wife stayed upstairs, and she was able to find some gifts for a few geeky buddies of ours, mostly of the Star Wars and Doctor Who variety. And I can't remember if it was Stephen or Dave Walker, but one of them pointed out the huge selection of Doctor Who audios they had for sale. M did some shopping upstairs as well for roommates and a couple other for nerdly buddies. But I headed straight down to the paper, to the comics. And like I said, this is a big, popular store, and they did not have any discount bins as such. It reminded me of a similar store here in Columbus, Ohio. The biggest, most well-lit store. A store that likes charging full price for everything they have. But Stephen did direct me to the discount trade shelf, and I ended up with a pretty good deal. Not quite Quarterbin, but the closest I found in all of the UK. For the nicely discounted price of £1.99, I picked up the trade paperback, Infinite Crisis Aftermath, The Spectre. 6 issues, encompassing the 3-issue mini, Crisis Aftermath, The Spectre, and the Spectre stories from the first 3 issues of the 2006 take on Tales of the Unexpected. After factoring in the exchange rate, that works out to about 42-43 cents per issue. For context, in terms of what this trade is, what these stories are, here's the description from the back of the trade. Separated from his human host, the avenging spirit known as the Spectre embarked on a rampage, causing massive destruction and disrupting all magic in the DC universe. To redeem himself, he now seeks out a new host to control his anger and help carry out his mission of justice. He finds salvation in the spirit of Crispus Allen, a detective killed in the line of duty by a corrupt Gotham City police officer. But Allen is still limited to a mortal perspective. Can the Spectre make him embrace his ultimate destiny, even if the price is greater than any human soul can bear? Remember, one of our very early episodes of Darkness to Light, I think our second episode, was on the character of the Spectre. I'm a big fan of the concept of the character, and as much as I like the original take, the rough-and-tumble Golden Age Jim Corrigan, the idea of this being, in a sense, a legacy character, or at least a role that can be filled by different people, that works for me too. I was not a big fan of the retcon of Eclipso as God's original rough draft version of the Spirit of Vengeance, but that's for theological reasons as much as for storytelling comic book reasons. And although Crispus Allen didn't hold the mantle very long, just a couple of years of publishing time, I think it's an important little era, and these were actually pretty good stories. Well worth the 33 pence each. And then from there, we headed out to our final store, to Stephen Lacey's home store, to an award-winning store. And we'll talk about that right after this.
The dawn of an age. The founding of a family.
You know we haven't done enough research into the effects of cosmic rays.
We've got to take that chance.
Conditions are right tonight. Let's go.
They're penetrating the ship. Our shielding isn't strong enough.
I feel like I'm burning up.
Too heavy. Can't move.
Too heavy.
We're all alive.
I feel so strange.
You're fading away. I can't see you at all anymore.
Look what's happened to you. You're changing.
Oh, Reed, not you too.
What happened to me? To all of us.
I can fly.
We gotta use that power to help mankind, right?
And so was born the Fantastic Four.
For soon the Mole Man will have the entire world in his power.
I am the mightiest living mortal on Earth. And half mankind shall feel that might.
The Fantastic Four. Little do they dream they're but pawns in the hands of Dr. Doom.
Human Torch will be the Puppet Master's next victim.
You Earthlings can't change the way I can. That means I'm the most powerful person on Earth.
I've been expecting you, for I am the Thinker.
I vow never to return, my lord, until the Fantastic Four are no more and the planet Earth is no more.
You're in the presence of the awesome Ralatots, King of Kings, Master of Men, and Lord of the Seven Suns.
Fool, you're just a muscular freak, blind or Hulk.
Stop! You must not end on the castle of Diablo.
My journey has ended. This planet shall sustain until it has been drained of all elemental life. So speaks Galactus.
Flame on!
It's clobbering time!
The Fantastic Four from the very beginning. Witness the origins of a legend. The Fantasticast. ffcast.libsyn.com.
And then we headed to our third and final store, to Stephen Lacey's store. Orbital Comics. Steve was rightly very proud of the fact that Orbital was the 2016 winner of the prestigious Eisner Spirit of Comics Retailer Award. This is awarded at San Diego Comic-Con every year to one comic book store somewhere in the world, so it is definitely a big deal. And Steve was very pleased to be taking us to a Spirit Award-winning store. It's just that I've been to the 2015 winning store, Pack Rat Comics, here in Central Ohio. Now, that's not my main store, but I go 3 or 4 times a year to the Pack Rat Basement of Dollar Books. But back to Orbital. Nice guys, nice layout, very nice store for sure. I mentioned before that I like the way that Gosh did their dividers and organizing, working in the cheap books into the main back issue area. Orbital didn't do that, but they did have fun with their dividers, with their title cards, little jokes and commentary. For example, the Scooby Apocalypse label included the phrase, Ruh-roh. Other ones that I or M saw, actual dividers, actual labels, among the back issue boxes included Justice League blah blah blah, Volume 5, Justice Guys versus Suicidal Guys, Planet of the Vapes, Paging Dr. Quinzel, and All New Snick Snicked. So I loved the sense of humor, obviously. And this store actually had discount bins, about 5 or 6 boxes maybe, of 50 pence books. And I want to say that they were mostly, or maybe completely, arranged alphabetically, which, as anyone knows, is pretty rare among the cheap boxes. And under the S's in the cheap bins, I found Sleepy Hollow 1 and 2. Now, this is a 4-issue miniseries, so I considered leaving them behind, not having the whole story. But I wanted to buy something at every store we visited, and it looked like a pretty good read. This was from 2014 from Boom Studios and came out in the summer between the first and second seasons of the Fox TV show. And that first season was way better than it had any business being. And the second one wasn't too bad either. So I liked that this fell right when the TV show was at its best. That's another reason why I picked up these issues. That, and they were written by Marguerite Bennett, who writes DC Bombshells, as well as some other solid, well-thought-of books. Minor miracles sweep the town, and that sounds like a good thing for a change after the events of Season 1, but the miracles start to backfire ever more violently as Issue 1 goes by. Abby and Ichabod must find time between saving the world to save their new hometown. In Issue 2, Ichabod begins to mess around with a puzzle box that Jenny picked up at Corbin's request, but the box begins to mess back with him, and Ichabod grows cruder, crueler, and wilder the longer the box is in his possession. Abby and Katrina have to solve the puzzle box mystery to make sure that all the good in Ichabod is not lost forever. Issue 2 also featured a humorous backup short story written and drawn by Noel Stevenson, which was pretty funny. Actually, the main stories in these issues were pretty funny, too. Or at least they captured the humorous aspect of the TV series, as well as the horror and drama bits. And I always have to mention the art when we talk about licensed properties. And in these ones, they do a pretty good job, especially with Tom Meson's character of Ichabod Crane. And as I was thinking about this, maybe it's because he's quite a distinctive-looking male lead with the hair and the beard and the 200-plus-year-old outfit, as opposed to Abby and Katrina, who look like very pretty women, but kind of generic very pretty women. Their ethnicity is different. Their hair color is different. But beyond that, they're not as unique-looking as Meson is. And I'm not saying this is a comic book thing. I think this is more of a Hollywood thing. These women are, on the surface, quite different looking. But each of them I think, comes from that general, standard, attractive Hollywood lead actress category. And so in drawn form, neither one particularly stands out. I'm just working on this hypothesis, and I don't quite know how far to push this, but that's what I'm thinking about these two issues, at least. We wrapped up at Orbital, which was a fine comic store, and then we headed out to lunch. But we got interrupted on the way, and I can't remember exactly how this happened, who saw who first, who called out to who, but I think the word that we heard was Steve from across the street, a few blocks away from Orbital. And we ran into another former Fantasticast guest, Sam Savage, and his buddy Al. Sam designed the episode cover art for the Fantasticast, and it turns out he's a pretty nice bloke. He and Steve hadn't talked for a while, it seemed like, so they caught up and we talked about comics and movies and all of that. Like I said, Sam and Al, both nice guys. It was a pleasure meeting them both, and that was a sort of a bonus meetup. And then we hemmed and hawed about what we wanted for lunch, but the obvious solution was the one we landed on. A pub! As Em pointed out, this wasn't a pub crawl exactly. It was a nerd crawl that just happened to end at a pub. And Steve knew just the pub to hit. The world-famous Salisbury, a grade 2 listed Victorian gin palace. I don't know what any of that means, but it was on a sign inside the pub, so it must be true. And I guess it must be important. I'm pretty sure that one of us, maybe Steve, got the fish and chips because it was a pub and one of us had to. British law, I think, and all that. I wimped out and just got a burger, but it was pretty good. I also got, only because my wife gave me permission, some macaroni and cheese as my side dish. Now here's the thing. Many of the restaurants we went to in London had mac and cheese on the menu. But my wife kept saying, that sounds too American. But finally, there it was, in the pub, our last day. So I went ahead and finally ordered it, and it was pretty darn good. Nice and creamy, nice and cheesy, and some nice herb flavor. For lunch, Em got, I think, some kind of meat pie, and that was fine. But it was Mrs. Quarterbin that hit the lunch jackpot. She got the shepherd's pie with the minted lamb shank. That was awesome. Lots and lots of mint. All in all, a great dish. Now, when we were in London, we had one legitimate gourmet meal. But of the rest of the food, the regular food that we ate, that dish that she had was the best by far. Although my mac and cheese was a pretty great side dish also. So we hung out there for a while, eating and chatting, and a good time was had by all. And then we got Dave Walker to the tube station that he needed, and Steve and me and Em and Mrs. Quarterbin headed to, I think, Charing Cross. Steve had a thing that evening in that same general area, a few stops down the line, and we were all going the same direction, so we all got on the tube, hung out for a few stops, then gave him big hugs as he headed off his direction, and we stayed on for the trip back to Paddington Station and the short walk back to our hotel. And the next day, we headed off to Germany. As we said, for details on that portion of the vacation, listen to episode 12 of Dorkness to Light. Let's just say it was a trip 500 years in the making. So to sum up the London Nerd Crawl 2017, Dave Walker, a lot more hair than I expected, but a lovely fellow who hung out at the back of the walking line a lot chatting with my wife, and she had a great time chatting with him too. Stephen Lacey, very kind bloke, and the boy knows his London comic shops. He was at the front of the line, and I tried to keep up with him, or at least keep him in my line of sight. Em's job was pretty much to be right there in the middle, keeping me and Steve in sight and not letting Dave and the missus fall too far behind. Excellent chaps, excellent walk, excellent weather, by the way, excellent day all the way around. I know that Stephen Lacey is moving out of London by the end of the year, maybe sooner. But if you get over there in the next few months, he is one heck of a tour guide. Steve and Dave, thank you for your kindness, your generosity, your hospitality. It was a pleasure meeting you both and hanging out with you two for an afternoon.